Hey listeners, we've dropped our first episode, which is a pretty exciting time for us. And part of that is that we want to do some shout outs today for those people who have supported us.
Yeah, we would have done it last episode, but we're so organized, we're a whole episode ahead, so it's not coming out until now. First up on the list, the designer behind our awesome soundtrack, the music, the intro, and the stingers, Mr. Ian Francisco.
Yeah, and it's slightly mind-blowing to see someone who sort of gets music just come in and blitz something out.
Oh, it was crazy. Yeah. A bit like us talking in podcasts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
A very professional operator is Ian, so thank you very much. And also, we were pretty excited by the outreach from the community, right?
Yeah, totally. Well, obviously family's going to be straight in there, but it was interesting to sort of hear some perspectives on what we put out from non-education, like my bros in like government type work, and he found parallels there.
Yeah.
And buddy Brendan as well heard that we were trying this out, and he'd watched a Netflix documentary and suggested watching a bit like 10 minutes towards the end of it as well. So people are like want to be involved in the conversation, that which is awesome.
Yeah, nice. It is. It's really cool. And we were pretty excited watching just the amount of people listening. Most of that was my mum and your mum just watching on different, listening on different devices. But after that, there is a few people out there listening. So we want to hear from those people.
Yeah, for sure.
We wanted to get in touch, and they can do that by going where?
We've set up a Twitter account now, which is @riskybusiness or @riskybusinessed. And also you could email us as well, and that's riskybusinesseducation@gmail.com.
Nice. All right, on to the episode.
Cool.
To make stuff with about 100 things, you need to be patient with what you're doing.
Well, it's fun and we get to experience new things using like scary tools, but once we get used to it, it was actually very fun.
Right, Jack. So turns out that you did a better job than me with the quote last week. So I'm going to throw another one your way.
All right.
This one is by a guy called Edgar Tolson, and here it comes. You don't make it with your hands. You form it with your hands. You make it with your mind.
Nice. I like the idea behind that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of makes me want to challenge you to a making competition where you can only use your mind and I can only use my hands. We'll see who does a better job.
Yeah.
Nice. That brings us in really nice to this episode of Risky Business. We're talking about making.
Yeah,
the nice. Maker movement.
Yeah. It's been an interesting challenge for me. Like, I obviously look to you when I hear the word making. It was nice to sort of dip my toes and have a little look at some of the resources that you've used along the way as well, I think. And it's been enjoyable.
Yeah, nice. So the background for the listeners that may recall, or maybe they're not aware, but at Northbridge here we've got a makerspace,
mm-hmm.
And that's my domain, so I run that, and everyone's invited. But grade 5, which you teach, tends to be up there a fair bit as well.
Yeah.
But I think making is a fairly broad subject, and we'll get into that. But I don't know if it scares anybody, but it shouldn't scare, because I think a lot of what you naturally do in a classroom probably falls under the umbrella of what you might call making.
Okay, so that was where I wanted to start. And that's just the question to you. What is making for you? Like, what does that mean?
So this is like the easiest question to answer and the hardest question,
mm-hmm.
because it's super easy. Making is literally making stuff, right? But that then sounds kind of patronizing to say that to somebody, like, oh, what is a makerspace? It's a place where you make stuff.
Yeah.
But that really is all that it is, right? So anything that you could say, I made something, that's making,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
As simple as that. But there is some depth to it, and that's what I guess the point of this episode is, and we'll get through some of those things of all the different elements that are blended into that.
Yeah.
But I don't think there are any necessarily hard and fast rules about, you know, what is and isn't making. If you're doing something with your hands and you're making things, it's making.
Yeah, cool.
Okay. Sound right?
Yeah, I like that.
All right, cool. All right, well, we'd like to start off normally with the whys. So yep. Where this movement has come from, it's probably kicked off in the last decade or so, okay. I think. And so sort of what's been driving that and particularly for us, why we think it's worth exploring in education.
Yeah. Well, I went to the trusty handbook, which is the lifelong kindergarten.
Yep.
Yeah. And it was like the very first chapter as it cracks into it. It talks about a situation where the MIT equivalent in China realized that they had these grade A students, and this is a bigger thing across China and the world as well, is that they have these grade A students coming through, but not necessarily ready to take risks or not ready to try new things. And the people who are going to blaze trails and change the way that we do things need to be able to take risks and need to be able to define their own problems. And so they went out looking how to reform what the university did and the creativity aspect of making made up a bit of that.
Yeah, nice. I think that's been echoed in some of the stories we've heard from like in the tech world of, you know, what companies are looking for in mm-hmm. in employees and stuff. You know, when it comes to like graduates, you know, just having a degree is not enough, but yep. they want problem solvers. They want people that can do all sorts of different things, and yeah, making generally can get you a long way towards building some of those skills.
Yeah.
So that's for sure. I think something specific to our kind of context is what we notice in being in Asia.
Yeah.
That there is a focus on academics generally, mm-hmm. and so, you know, it can be somewhat that skills and sort of ways of learning that are very hands-on seem to be related more with like trade skill type things,
yeah,
like wood shop, right? Yeah. That's for like kids who are going to become carpenters, and you know, maybe families not quite understanding that it's not necessarily about picking up that skill but all the other things that are kind yeah, of okay. part of it.
Yeah.
And that, well, to be fair, it's not just in Asia, it's all around yeah. the world. Like schools everywhere are, over the last probably two decades, have closed down their wood shops, their electronics yeah. labs, and you know, textiles and stuff like that. It's kind of disappeared,
yeah.
and maybe now it's starting to come back somewhat.
Yeah, but I guess when it is coming back, it's a bit more free form, maybe. It's yeah. a bit more sort of transdisciplinary, I guess. Like sure. it's trying to bring together all of the things rather than it just being like we call it home tech or wood. Wood workshop and stuff like that. It's sort of a bigger picture of just like bringing all of those skills together to solve problems.
Yeah, so, yeah.
An improvement.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah. The other thing added to that, I guess, is that this idea that, you know, we're blessed and cursed with screens that make our life easier and harder as parents. Sometimes it can be quite handy to use the screen as a way to engage your child on the move.
Yep.
And that, and in our context as well, you see that around a bit where kids are on devices, which
the free babysitter.
The free babysitter, yeah.
Yeah.
And we are talking about creativity, and there are opportunities for creativity on that. It's not necessarily like a bad thing, but I think that maybe what we're trying to say is that when you're making with your hands, not just in a virtual world, then it can bring those other benefits as well.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, definitely want to look into that.
Yeah.
Cool. And then sort of the other thing that we've taken from some of the theory, reading a great book called The Maker Movement Manifesto.
Oh, cool.
So that's written by Mark Hatch, who is a CEO. Well, was the CEO of TechShop. I believe TechShop has gone under since. But at the time, they were kind of the leading makerspace chain in the world.
I have no idea who TechShop are.
Okay, TechShop was a makerspace. It was like a chain of makerspaces, really, really high, like high quality ones, I guess. Like lots of stuff. Anyway, and so his book talks a lot about just the value if you, as an entrepreneur or someone involved in like mm-hmm. startups and cool, like any kind of business that makes things, produces, you know, some kind of a product. If you have the skills to be able to make it yourself, maybe do the first few stages of prototyping. Like you can do some CAD drawings on your computer, you can get something 3D printed, you can bring things together and click them together, and you can cut out so much work that you would have had to otherwise outsource that would could potentially save you like millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that rapid prototyping sort of stage.
Yeah.
And so he just says like, it's just, even if you're not necessarily going to be making the product yourself down the line, if you're able to kind of be involved in that early stage, if you have that skill, super powerful in the business world. Cool.
Nice.
All right. Well, that's the theory. Let's delve into a little bit more, but first let's take a quick break.
Yeah.
This is the person I believe you were talking about is Anne Makosinski, 15-year-old girl who invented a flashlight powered by the holder's body heat.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely her. That is definitely
that's
her.
That's the one?
Yeah, yeah.
Nice. So this is a girl who invented this at school. She was doing some research in energy that is kind of discarded and wasted in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
She came up with a torch.
That's amazing. Yeah. So it sounds like that is the embodiment, right, of the maker movement. This is someone who was interested in something, had something she wanted to create, and she would have gone through this process, and she knows that she can make a difference and solve big problems.
Yeah, it's awesome. Mm. So awesome to see. And I mean, who could not want that for their kids?
Yeah,
for their students.
Okay, speaking of that, I'd be interested to hear maybe what a couple of our kids have to say about their experiences within making.
Yeah, nice. Sounds all right, cool. Let's listen to them.
Okay, little man. So that was a one screw. How many attempts did it take to get it screwed in?
4 or 5, one of those.
4 or 5? That's a lot of time for one screw, right?
Yeah.
And how did you get frustrated that experience, or what was going on in your brain there?
I got a bit frustrated.
You didn't seem like it. You seemed really happy the whole time.
Yeah, I seemed happy, but I was a bit frustrated.
Yeah, okay.
And also be like a bit more like, you need to be patient of what you're doing. And to make stuff with about 100 things, wow, that's a lot.
But so nailed it or failed it?
Failed it.
I think we nailed it.
Yeah. Okay.
Bye.
I said that only the zoo project is the fun one, because the rest, I keep on saying that math sucks, but now I don't.
Yeah, that's what I think too. Because like before, we always do like worksheets and stuff, and this time we get to like cut, and like it's not boring.
Is it because it's easy? Is that why you like it?
No, it's like more crafty than just like writing it down, because I like crafting more than writing.
It's like boring when you just have a sheet of paper and you just have to like work it out. It's like now you can like take paper and cut it, and like you get a measure and stuff, which is fun.
Okay, Coops. So that was, you've been ever so kind, and you've managed to hold off a few kids and let my wee man and myself like get engaged in building a robot. And this was, it was a challenging build the other day. What are you hearing here from what he's saying?
I think he's talking about resilience, as far as I can see. Like, just the fact that it's a project that he's working on, and there is like some kind of an end goal to it, I think helps a little with the motivation of getting through it. So it's tough. Like, tough putting those screws in, and they take 4 or 5 goes each. He's got a couple hundred to do, right? He was trying to do the maths on it, and he couldn't quite. But yeah, like that's there. But having that, knowing that there's something at the end of it, I think helps you push through and helps you get the resilience out of it.
He definitely talked about the patience side of things, but before he talked about that, I think he was just trying to have a go at me. But I love how it actually came out, because it was just a fact, right? Like, sometimes it takes 4 or 5 times to screw in a screw.
And what does that mean? It means it takes 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, exactly. And that is sometimes learning, that is sometimes making, that you are trying to do something many times. But if you can take that attitude of, well, sometimes this is what it's going to be like, then you're setting yourself up to be a successful learner and human.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that. Well, we've talked a few times now about that idea of the trial and error and sort of cyclical nature of learning, right? Yeah. And so I think that came through there. Yeah, we also saw from some of the other students a little bit more of the of what it looks like in the classroom.
Okay, yeah, so I can take the lead on that. So this is my class. I think I've probably talked about it before. It's you in maths using a hands-on approach, creating a zoo to sort of to get them to understand the concepts of volume and surface area and nets.
Yeah, nice to hear you weren't giving them more worksheets.
That
break it up a little bit.
Yeah. That, I can promise you that that's not a consistent thing, like it sounded like. Fake news. And I guess a benefit of this podcast is that I'm sort of like tuning in even more to what the kids are saying. I'm trying to hear those snippets of what's working for them as learners. And it was just me sitting there. I asked her to repeat it, obviously, but it was just hearing her talk with her friends and that. And it was, it was really cool to hear this idea that, do you know what, this single making has changed my attitude about what maths can be. And that was pretty special.
Yeah, and I think what she was describing in her own way, she was a bit unclear on the kind of words, but she was saying like crafting is kind of what I'm into. But I think she was describing something pretty fundamental, is that as humans in general, we like to do things with our hands. Yeah. We just do.
Yeah.
Everybody does. I think everyone's had that experience. And I feel like it taps into, I've heard like people talking about the types of jobs that people are most satisfied with tends to be like construction, people building houses, carpenters, things like that, because at the end of a day's work, you kind of see the fruit of your effort.
Yeah.
Then sort of more office jobs that tend to be the ones that you don't like, because, you know, it's just simply because you're using your hands and you're bringing something into the world that wasn't there before.
Yeah. That's cool. And so in class, in our grade, we sort of, We talked about the engagement and the actual development of their understanding of the concept as well. And we thought about what our assessment should be and should look like. And we decided that we wanted to try something that was more along the making side of things, which had some calculations in it as well. And it was such a successful and satisfying experience.
Nice.
It was, all students were engaged. All students had challenges within it, but they were all working on it. SEN kids, EAL kids, it didn't matter who, everyone was engaged in it, and their scores came out well, but there was still room for children to not be successful, so the test was had enough rigor. But I think that everyone who completed that assessment came out feeling positive and successful in some way, shape or form, and I think that that's something nice that happened in the classroom, but it's also a tribute to like looking at things a slightly different way and responding to your kids and getting them to create as well.
Yeah, outstanding. All right, well, that's kind of how you make it fit into a classroom and sort of blend that together. But I'm also really interested in just making for maker's sake. I don't know there, but like, As a personal hobby, your own sort of expression.
A free expression, yeah, okay.
Yeah. So a couple of the kids were talking about that kind of stuff, their own free projects. So we've got the way our makerspace is set up here in Northbridge. Mm-hmm. We're open all the time after school for a couple hours and before school and whatever, and kids can come in. Yeah, some kids come in and work on a project that they're doing for a class, but most of the time they're just doing something that's totally unrelated because they're into it.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, really exciting. I find that really exciting. Some of the kids were talking about some cool stuff there.
Yeah, cool. Shall we have a little lesson?
So what drives an individual to create something? Well, that depends on how far that individual's imagination goes or what inspires them. Now, let's look at it this way. If you tell an artist that they can make whatever they want, they don't know what to create. But if you tell them to make something specific, then they could create something beautiful because they have a sense of direction as to what they want to create.
Okay, so it's good to have some kind of starting point?
Yes, instead of having all your ideas everywhere.
Our club is the Maker Girl Club, and we build and design stuff for the maker space, such as the lumber cart, and currently we're designing
trying to renovate like maker space and improving
the layout.
We're creating a sign for the maker space and some banners, posters.
How did you get interested in making as a hobby?
Let me think.
Because we have design as a subject in school. Criterion C requires us to physically make the products, which has got us more interested in how to improve in
like creativity and your skills. And
it all started from the arcade from grade 7, where there are so many people joining. So grade 8, we decided to start something like a group or a club to build stuff like the arcade. Well, it's fun and we get to experience new things using like scary tools. But once we get used to it, it was actually very fun.
And seeing the final product.
Yeah, it's satisfying. Like, the hard work pays off.
All right, Ando, what'd you spot?
Oh, well, I actually got stuck on the detail of this idea of individuals' imaginations.
Yep.
And that the Zero to Maker was talking about how he really wasn't a maker to begin with, and he couldn't like see and imagine where that was going, but that through like there came a point where he got past it and stopped seeing the sort of repetitive nature like as a tedious thing, and then
we're talking about the iterations in the design process.
I guess so, but it could also be the screwing and the screws, right?
Yep.
It's like boring and but then he sort of got past it and he saw himself as a maker. So I hear this young man talking about imagination and that, but I also would challenge that and say that that imagination doesn't need to be a fixed thing, and that you can actually push yourself to, by making more, you can sort of develop that imagination of making, I guess.
Yeah. A quote that was in the running for the opening this morning, earlier, was you can't use up all your creativity.
Yeah.
The more you use it, the more you have.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
Which I think kind of rings in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. And then we heard from some of the girls who have formed the Maker Girls, mm-hmm. which is like an after-school club, I guess.
Yeah.
And they're just a bunch of girls. They come in and make stuff, and they've worked on a whole bunch of projects. And yeah, for them, it's kind of it seems as if it's just they're kind of taking it as a hobby, a way to get away from things that might be kind of stressing them out a little bit at school. So they're just seeing it as a way of kind of chilling out and doing something enjoyable and that side of it. And you were talking a little bit about, you were saying kind of you feel like making is something that you might naturally go to as a reaction to kind of just being bored.
Yeah, yeah. And like it is a fact that for some kids at school, it is a little bit harder to engage with what you're doing at times. And so having that little outlet that brings positivity to your image of what schooling is, I feel like that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, cool. Yeah. And I really am interested in kind of raising the status of making from something that kids just do at home, like I build some stuff or whatever, I tinker with computers or whatever it is I do, to being like a genuine recognized hobby. It's something that you could be good at and something that you could take seriously, rather than it just be kind of random one-off little projects that you just happen to do. Like you're a maker or you're a tinkerer or whatever it is, like it has some kind of a status to it.
Oh yeah, that's nice. And I've been wondering as we've been going through this process of how the makerspace works, but who comes to the makerspace before school, after school, during break times? Like, are you seeing the same sort of person come through, or are you seeing a range of people, like, if that makes sense?
Yeah, it can. It is definitely a range.
Yeah.
I think it offers something. It offers something to kids that maybe are not getting much out of, say, sport,
mm-hmm.
or maybe music.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of other sort of big extracurriculars.
Yeah.
And so, if they're not engaging in those, they might be wandering around the school and end up here.
Yeah.
And then they kind of get stuck here. Also, interestingly. I've got essentially two interesting groups that end up here. Kids with no friends.
Mm-hmm.
They just happen to come and hang out
because
they've got nowhere else to go. And then they find some friends. And
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, there is at least a few different little groups of mates who were just kind of randoms that met here, which is really cool. So there's that social emotional sort of support that comes out of it, and I think helps to build the community aspect as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one of kids that are really attracted here is the SEN kids. For some reason, I'm not an expert on this, but I'm sure people who are will recognize and be able to spot instantly that maybe it's obvious to them, but you know, in particular autistic kids, they like it here.
It's nice, and it's probably like, it's great that you've created an environment that's safe for these students to come to, and it's also great that they, I imagine they can find those things that they're really interested in, and it's like maybe a way to de-stress from the day as well. If that's a need.
And there's a one of your boys in grade 5 who comes up here heaps, and. I get the feeling for him, he's quite good at making stuff, particularly out of Lego and other things and the connects and stuff like that. And so I get the feeling that for him, it's a time for him to shine, because when he's in here and building his stuff, he's a little bit of a hero, you know, because everyone's like, oh, whoa, look at the new thing that what's his name made. And, you know, it's whereas he might not be ever sort of shining in within the classroom, maybe.
Well, yeah, and I think that's when the making is really important within the classroom as well, because we've had opportunity to explore volume through Unilink cubes, and it's been he's just bang straight away, he knows how to, he wants to set things up and he can see it really clearly, so he does have that status there, but like you say, it's through the making side of learning, and I think that's really powerful for him, though it has become quite a distraction, the Unilink cubes. I have to put them away at some point.
Yeah, for sure. All right, I think that feels like a good time to have a quick break, and we'll come back in with some more stuff.
Okay, nice one.
All right, Ando, they're back.
Who's back?
The haters.
The haters are back.
Yep, it's time for us to think about their viewpoints and see what we can come back to them with.
Okay, all right then. So something that one of the students actually alluded to, which I think you put right, was it's just arts and crafts.
Yeah.
It's all making is. It's just arts and crafts.
Yeah, I think so. You hear this sometimes, I guess, the naysayers.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just arts and crafts, or is there more to it? Yeah, I think we've demonstrated that it is more than that. And it is what you make of it, I suppose, and depends on what you're providing them. But, you know, hopefully you could take it. Arts and crafts might be a starting point for it, but then developing into some more sophisticated materials and tools and things.
Yeah, and I think that even if it was like at home, arts and crafts, like, you're looking for the value in it, right? You're looking for those moments of resilience. You're looking for the problem solving, and you're calling it out. It's just like, oh, wow, look at that. You've spent 20 minutes working on this, and this is what you've created. And that's something to be celebrated, which can actually link in with something else, which is that it takes too much time. Like, how much time are we going to commit to this making, whether it's for making for learning or making for hobby or or whatnot.
Yeah, and also, like we have mentioned, the iterative design process and the nature of that, it does take a lot of time, right? Mm-hmm. It's much easier to have a kid write up a plan, execute the plan, reflect on it, done.
Yeah.
And tie it all up with a nice little bow. To be, you know, what making is all about is revisiting that after you maybe things didn't quite work, and then going back and trying it again. You know, I mean, that could take you a whole year to perfectly, you know, nail a particular project if you keep going back. You know, so yeah, that's something you got to weigh up and balance.
Okay, I've got a question for you. So when we're talking about making within the classroom, or in my mind at least, there is quite a lot of the teacher support, and I'm talking about support not as in I'm doing things, but I'm there and I'm trying to watch, and I'm trying to find those moments when I need to be involved and step away when I don't need to be involved. But your process is probably going to be quite different, because are you more a resource in the makerspace rather than you're trying to find those moments?
Yeah, I actually feel like, if I'm a little critical on and reflecting on myself here, I am not totally consistent here. Mm-hmm. In that, yes, I should be a resource. I should be like, you know, you guys have what you need. Yeah. But if there's anything that comes up that you can't solve for yourself, then, you know, come and talk and I'll help you through it. But then, you know, I sort of also will wander the classroom and drop in on kids.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of be like, oh, here's a cool idea for you, and sort of, you know, interject a little bit.
Okay.
You know, I try to give them good stuff, but yeah, maybe I'm...
Yeah. What about after school? Like, I'm talking about the hobbyists. Like, because they're more motivated by themselves. Do you see, like, I will, and you will try and step in at the right time when they need that help. But if you're in for the hobby, if you're in to create something for yourself, do they get to that point and then stop, or do they find ways to push through and come back to their design?
They do. I think it totally changes when it's after school. It's mm-hmm. a different environment completely. It feels more like, I feel in that case, a bit more like a co-pilot type thing.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
we're just working on it together, because generally those projects are things that I have... I've never done.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say like I have no idea about, because, you know, I can generally think of a way that we could at least approach a problem.
Yeah.
So from the problem solving aspect, I can support them, but generally technically maybe not, because they might be investigating something I've never built myself.
Mm-hmm.
So in those cases, it's just genuinely, and normally it's very individual as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's one-on-one or one and a couple of kids, and we're just working on something together. It's really exciting.
Yeah.
But support is not so much the thing, as it's more of just like bouncing ideas off each other.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's really fun.
Okay. So, I know that we're talking about the haters, but I'm just going to pause the haters, because I've got another question for you. I feel like that you've always been a maker in some way, shape or form. Like, you've made movies, yourself, but has sort of running this makerspace, have you seen changes in yourself about your approach to either making or just your approach to life that's been like a benefit from starting this up and getting it going so successfully in our school?
Yeah, I have. I suppose I've always been a maker but like you said, on different kinds of things. I haven't always actually made physical objects.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably the main difference. And I've picked that up more through doing this. I actually, now that I think of it, is probably somewhat connected to what we're saying about it, you know, raising the status of it.
Yeah.
I didn't really think, like, I enjoyed tinkering with things at home, but I never really thought of it as something like worthwhile and having meaning. I just thought of like, it's something that pops up. I found something, some little project that I'm working on. But yeah, it's... I forgot what I was talking about.
Yeah, no, that's all right. It sounds very much like that you're seeing it as from the development of people sort of side of things, right? It's not just now about the tinkering. It's about what's making what makes that such a valuable thing to tinker. So it's probably raise your awareness about the background of it all.
All right, the haters again.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing about making that is really hard to do is assessment.
Mm-hmm.
And how do I make this happen with my classroom?
Mm-hmm.
Look, there's not enough time for us to go fully into detail today, but anything you want to kind of mention on that?
No, I think it's just like that we've had a little bit of success with some things that we've tried out that that I want to come back to, but obviously we need the time to do that, and with 2 weeks left, it's not quite the right time. But I think, do you have an exciting opportunity where maybe you can delve into that a little bit deeper?
Yeah. So as part of our family of schools, we've got this great collaboration
nice.
With MIT. So yep. I'll be there in a couple of weeks' time, and I know that on the agenda is talking to some experts on how to assess making mm-hmm. and STEAM. And actually, this what we're going to be hearing from comes from the Teaching Systems Lab,
okay.
Which is a department there at MIT. So maybe we'll check it up on Twitter, link or something. Right. But if people want to have a little look at some of the resources they've pulled together, they've got some interesting stuff.
Cool. I'm excited to hear that when you return.
Yeah. Nice. All right. Well, let's take a little break, and we'll come back in just with some ideas of how to get started, and we'll wrap things up.
All right, earlier on I asked you if you were to get like one or two things that you thought were a must-have in Makerspace. You talked about the laser printer, but maybe we can think about setting up a Makerspace in general. And like, so what are the things that we'd want to have in a Makerspace?
Yeah, cool. So I've come up with a little list here, nice. And we'll go from like more feasible to less feasible in terms of what you're likely to be able to get, mm-hmm. right? So some bigger ticket items later in the list. Step one.
Yep.
Cardboard.
Nice.
It's huge. Kids love making with cardboard, and there is actually a lot you can do with it.
Yep.
The more sort of sophisticated you want to go about it and whatever, but everyone can attack it. Everyone's yep. ready for it.
Yeah, cool.
I really love the Makedo. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's spelt Makedo.
Yep.
I don't know if it's Makedo or Make Do.
Yeah.
But have you seen these ones? We used them on the photo booth for the those little blue connector things.
Yep.
Really cool way of like connecting cardboard, and some of them are articulated and can move and like hinges and stuff. But they're really cool.
And even just exploring how cardboard can work as well is quite like using those, or it can bend, but you can cut it gently and you can score it and you can make it stay connected but fold it and
yeah totally yeah, nice. And also even if for younger year levels, cardboard might be the actual tool, the actual medium they use, but even for upper levels you need heaps of cardboard and resources just for that very first prototype.
Yep.
So it's huge.
Cool. Nice. So next one I'm pretty savvy with because we have it at home a lot. It's a family favorite for kids and adults, and that's Lego kits.
Yeah.
Nice. Or Kinects as well, I've seen here, and that the kids are currently making a roller coaster. They're pretty powerful tools because they can be used once in one way, and then you can use them again in another way, and that's what you're looking for, really.
Yeah, totally. And I think if at any Makerspace or Maker Corner or whatever you're setting up, you want something that's going to stand the test of time and that is worth investing in. And I think you can trust in those particular kits.
Okay, so moving on up, getting a little bit more complicated. What do we got?
Well, I think the Lego Mindstorms, if you want to get into robots, that is a good... Oh, man, it is so cool. That's where you want to start.
Yep.
The kids have really loved the Mindstorms. Vex is also out there, which is another really nice platform. Both of those, I would say, equally valid and can be really expanded on. So, mm-hmm. again, worth investing in. Not the kind of thing you're going to grow out of in 6 months' time.
Okay.
Really, really limitless.
Okay, nice. And then we're moving into some other things, which, my mum has given the kids this, and they spent time in the holidays just working on this. And this is sewing, embroidery, those sorts of...
Crochet.
Yeah, crochet.
I don't have the skills, but people who do and have brought these into Makerspaces, it works so well.
Yep.
I've seen it. It's crazy. I have a little dabbling with embroidery. Something that was really cool when I tried it out was, I think because none of the kids had ever done any embroidery, boys or girls, they didn't realize that it was there was any kind of gendered thing to it. So boys were getting into the embroidery, embroidering soccer balls and their names and stuff like that, and with no awareness that it is seen as a girly thing, right? Which it shouldn't be, but that's you know, it was really cool.
Yeah,
nice. I liked it. Cool. So hand tools, something for like working with wood. I think it's good to have some power tools, maybe some saws, things like that. You have to keep in mind the safety aspect.
Yeah.
But good to have those things for if you want to sort of scale up a little bit from cardboard and start working with some wood.
Cool. Nice. And then we can move into some electronics that Dalton from last week has sort of talked about a little bit as well. He's at Desert Climber, if you want to get in touch with him. And that's Raspberry Pi and Arduinos, and there's Microbits and...
Meowbits was the one that he was talking about?
Yeah, I think so Meowbits too. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some really cool stuff out there. Even if you're not experienced, you grab one and jump online because there is resources everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere. It's crazy. Certainly, we've had some fun with Raspberry Pis here. Arduinos, we've dabbled with, but I do want to take that a little further.
Cool.
But yeah, heaps of cool stuff out there.
Nice. And then we get into the ones that people, when they think of makerspaces, they can think about and they get really excited about, and that's the 3D printer and the laser cutting, which we talked about earlier.
Yeah, I think probably not feasible in a classroom, but if you're going to set up a makerspace, yeah, you want to look at getting some of these things. You do want a big ticket item because it can get people excited to come.
Yeah.
I don't know if people would be super excited to come to play with cardboard, even though they might get just as much out of it. But there's a little bit of advertising and making it sexy, you know. Yeah. And so, yeah, 3D printers are really cool.
Yeah. The last thing on your list, you're like shouting at me, and that's petty cash.
I've got it in all caps and like exclamation marks.
Yeah. Tell me about this one.
Okay, so the point here, I think, and this is hard to do within a school context because schools don't generally operate in this way, but if you can find a way to have some cash set aside for things that come up during the project, and I'm particularly talking about if you've got kids working on a project and it's really something of their own passion and interest, you can't really predict exactly what you're going to need to support them, right? Yeah. So they might be going along and like, oh, we need some specialty item because it's perfect for what we're trying to do. Well, you know, it's not possible for you to have gotten that into your last year's budget or whatever. So having like a little bit of a petty cash thing really works. Something that we've done here, I had the Maker Girls put on a little movie night and do their own little fundraiser.
Yeah.
And so at one point they did something and they had about $300.
Yeah.
Kept it in a little envelope in my drawer. Hopefully that's not inviting like thieves to come into my class.
Advertise that. Well done.
I think we used it all. And so they had a little bit of money. So when they were like, oh, we want to build this, I was like, go for it. We'll go buy the things. We've got money. We don't have to wait for anyone to say we can or we can't. Let's just do it. So if you can find a way to make that work so that you can say yes to things and turn it around a little faster, because I think within schools, that is notoriously something that holds you up.
Yeah.
That's just made me think of something that's glaringly not on the list.
Yeah.
Is some kind of corner or some bins full of like recycled stuff.
Yeah. Nice.
Like old, you brought in a bunch of like old electronics and things like that. People have got stuff to clear out of their houses. But I guess that goes with the cardboard junk art thing. But yeah, recycled objects, whatever it is, whether it's cereal boxes or old computers, but you've got to collect that stuff. You've got to have space for it.
Nice. So I guess if you're thinking of setting up a maker space, make a corner, whatever it is, then feel free to get in touch with us. That'd be fantastic. And from a classroom perspective, I'm very much a novice in the making. I've had a try and I really enjoyed what I saw with what the kids were creating and the knowledge they were gaining and the skills. But I would love to hear other people's thoughts of what they're trying in class and what's successful and what's not. So please do get in touch if you've got something to share, because we'd love that.
Yeah, hit us up on Twitter. That's @riskybusiness, also known as @riskybusinessed. but I prefer the former.
Yeah.
Or riskybusinesseducation@gmail.com. That's our email. So yeah, we want to hear, and hopefully we can, I don't know, do some listener mail or something.
That'd be cool.
That would be really cool.
Nice.
All right, nice. That's it, Ando.
Yeah, nice, Coops. Every time. See you.
Choice.